My wife and I now will look back. If we have kept this house, it will be paid off. Mm-hmm. The value will have doubled, especially with entry-level homes. It was well-maintained and all that stuff. So the reason why I'm sharing this story, I didn't know what I was doing. That I know there's a lot of people out there that be like, when can I start? I have a $5,000 when I started. And I made money when I sold the house. And because I lived there for a certain time before, I think it's 1 or 2 years in Nebraska, I didn't have to pay capital gain. So I made money. But looking back, I should not have sold the house. I should have cash out, refinanced, get my money out, and keep renting it and keep renting it. I didn't do that. So for those of you that are listening to us today and are worried about, I don't have the money, there's a ways if you want to do it. So I did it.
Welcome to Rio Radio, episode 99 with Muta Kabon. You're listening to Rio Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RioRadio.com.
You just like the
well,
name.
I do. So, well, that's a fun, probably the most fun name we've had to say yet, I would venture to guess.
If I had a nickname him, I would nickname him Smiley.
Yeah, I know, right? We talked about that yesterday. I was like, he's the one that's always got a smile on his face.
Yeah,
right?
he feels like everything is always right in his life.
Yeah, just don't worry, be happy.
And after today's podcast, we know that pretty much everything's right
that's
in his
true.
Life.
That's true, yes.
Especially since he had no weird investment stories to really give us.
I know, he's boringly successful.
And his failures were like, yep.
Lame failures.
Yep, that we understand that failure.
Yeah, no, he was, Muta was just such a fun guy. I mean, from West Africa, targeted for some reason, which we still haven't figured out, Nebraska of all places.
How did we not ask that?
I don't know how he ended up here. It was school. That was why he ended up going to school here.
Okay,
but you'll find out more about that in the episode.
It's a long episode, people.
It is. Well, it won't be if you listen to part one and then part two. Yeah, there you go. So what's up with you, Tedison Richard Kosh?
My wheels have been turning because I had a investor that brought up being interested in buying this building here that we're in.
Okay, so the podcast studio, which would make everyone sad, you're talking about selling it.
Yeah, I had an offer, and I had somebody that was prospecting it, wanted me to provide some numbers. We'll see what happens out of it. But in that conversation, I said, hey, we would really like to retain this office space. So this is what we're willing to rent it for. I'd be willing to stay for an extra 12 months and go from there. So and it adds a lot more value because it'd be higher than market rent on the size of a unit.
Yeah.
So I think that'll probably help the sale go along, but we'll see what happens. Muta was actually interested, and he had me give him a quick tour. I didn't realize that one of my Airbnbs was full, and I went ahead and walked in on somebody.
Yeah, that just happened, like 30 minutes ago.
I felt so bad walking in there.
Describe it.
So like we're going through the units, and I'm popping. Like I checked the parking lot because each parking lot has a numbered space, and I'm like, okay, there's nobody in these units. And so I type the code in and I walk in, and right when you walk in, there's like a clear glass, like double doors that go into the bedroom, and there's somebody sleeping right there. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God.
He woke up.
And I'm like, he turned over and looked at me, and I'm like, I am so sorry. And I'm just kept on saying, sorry, 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 as I'm backing out and I'm locking the door and I'm in the hallway. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He never said a word. And then I called Austin, the property manager, on this one. I'm like, I go, Austin, please get on there and just message him on Airbnb how apologetic I am. And I just feel like a dipshit.
What if he would have rolled over and was like, well, hello there.
Here's the thing. I never walk into these units without checking with the property manager and make sure that they're vacant. But, usually I have an idea of what's going on, and there's somebody parked in the back, but I was like, oh, they're all empty. I'm good.
Man, I had my first, well, it was like a 3-star review on Airbnb. You know, I have my one Airbnb property that I've had. I've had like...
That's like detrimental.
I know. And especially in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, every rating that you get is going to make wild swings in your overall rating because you don't have very many of them, you know? So yeah. I've had like five or six stays is all. And, you know, the 3-star. And I was like, what happened? And I've been, like the last 3 weeks I've been traveling. So I haven't been, it hasn't been like top of mind or anything, but they kind of left feedback and they're like, oh, we couldn't get out to the patio because the door wouldn't open. And there was like a piece of wood that had popped up on the deck that was blocking the door from opening. So we weren't able to use the patio the entire time we were there, which was like 3 days or whatever. And I was like, what? And I knew the piece of wood they were talking about because it had popped up before, but it wasn't ever blocking the door. And we had just, you know, put it back down or whatever. And I was like, oh, man. And then she's like, yeah. And there was hair. It just wasn't very clean. And we smelled a faint smell of smoke. And I was like, what? What is going on? There's no smoking in this unit. I'm like, this sounds...
Or if you're building, period.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is concerning. And so I was like, did my cleaner even clean? You know? Because she's like, yeah. And there was hair on the comforter. And I was like, gross. Then I go over there and like, it's fine. There's... You know, like the door opened on the first try out on the patio. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I was just like, I got my first kind of like kick in the, you know,
yeah,
gonads here with Airbnb. So I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I'm going to go out and buy a bunch of these. And I'm like, oh God, now I got a 3-star review, which isn't the end of the world. And like, I guess it gives you some stuff to work on or whatever, mm-hmm. but now I'm looking for a new cleaner that is, because he was like kind of resisting our process, you know, like, hey, when you're done, confirm with us and send us some pictures and like before and after. And like, if there's any issues, let us know. Is there anything that smells, you know what I mean? Just all that stuff. And they weren't doing all that. Just, they were like, oh, we got it. You know?
So my advice, a couple of pieces of advice I give people when they're doing reviews, and I wish I would use my own advice, but,
don't walk in unannounced. Is that advice number one?
That's going to give me a 1-star review right there. And trust me, it's going to be detrimental. But anyway, you know, if you open up the cupboards, take a picture of exactly what your cupboards look like. And then that way, you know, your cleaners know if something's stolen or not. And
but you may be describing this, but take a picture of it and post it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like post it on the, do you actually
inside the
tape
cabinet.
It? You tape it inside the cabinet, what it should look like.
That's what you should do. And then that way, you know, if something's stolen, but you also know the way you want it every time.
Yeah.
And then do that with everything you want. This is what my drawers are going to look like. You can do a collage in there.
Okay.
This is what the drawers look like. And you can put text underneath there. There's 4 forks, 4 knives, because I don't know why, but somebody steals a fork or a knife every single week out of one of my units. You can go through and make sure take pictures of each cabinet. You know, if you have an air fryer and an air fryer stolen once, we don't know when it got stolen, you know. And underneath your sink, there's certain things in there. That if there's a blow dryer and some refills of stuff in there, take a picture of it, because that's what you want your cleaner to know. Because there's certain companies, you talk to Ryan Miller about this. He's got specific, companies he uses. There's like an automated, company that does cleaning, kind of like Uber.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it goes vacant, it sends a message out, and then they prospect out with the price. The cleaner will come. And then,
I know what you're talking about. It's a site, right? Where they have vetted people, and then you can say, here's my property. And what's the name of it, though?
I keep wanting to say Zero Res, but that's not it.
No.
But anyway, so they come in, and they can, if they have a layout of exactly what you expect, then they can checklist and be like, hey, there wasn't these utensils in there. But part of your cleaning routine is that you want your utensils to look like this every time. You want your cups to look like this every time. You want your decor to look like this every time.
Yeah.
I had a midterm person in one of my properties the other day, and he moved out on August 1st, and I went there to walk through, and I'm like, all the decor is missing. Like, where is my – I'm missing wall pictures. I'm missing, like, tons of stuff. My pillows are missing. And I was, like, losing my stuff, and I called the property manager, and he's like, yeah, we'll go through it. We'll find everything. And he's like, hey, we did the best we could. Well, the other day, I had somebody was interested in a fully furnished Airbnb. And I was like, you know, I'd be interested. I would entertain an offer on this at this price. So I went and showed it to him. I went into the basement, and then the previous tenant didn't like some of my stuff, obviously, and had all the wall decor, fake flowers, pots, pillows, everything just sitting in the basement on a shelf, on a concrete shelf.
What?
Yeah. Like, why did you ungut? Why did you gut my place?
That's weird. That's weird.
But if I had the pictures up of exactly what's supposed to look like, then they would have known, hey, this is missing. This decor is missing. This Keurig is missing. And they could have charged them accordingly for all those items.
Yeah. Have you ever called Airbnb, like their support line, where you've had a dispute with a guest or something like that, or you got a crappy review and they were trying to basically extort you to get free stay or something?
They don't care about that. But what they do care about is that you can talk to them as if something's stolen or broken.
Yeah.
I had some really expensive, like acrylic clear chairs or like designer chairs. Mm-hmm. And I had one family staying in there and they broke two of the three.
Jeez.
And they're higher end. I mean, they're like $150 per chair, you know, for these high top ones. And so we were able to get money through that.
Okay.
Those phone calls, but they don't get two craps about the reviews. They're not going to work with you on that.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't, but Austin, my property manager, handles all that.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I don't know. It can be a little frustrating, but those reviews kill you. And if you get too many bad reviews, they'll put your thing on suspension.
Yeah.
And here's a funny thing is that I have one unit where I had like multiple complaints that people were complaining of smelling gas.
Well, yeah, I remember that.
And to a point where they shut down all my units at one point because they wanted to do a safety check. And the MED came out immediately and said, and that's our local gas utility district here. And they said, nope, there's no gas. But there was reviews, you know, that were starting to pile up about this. Well, we come to find out, and this is last year, that we had a broken pipe. And sewer gas smell was coming in through that.
Oh, sewer gas, not natural gas.
But they reported natural gas.
Yes.
And so we actually had to tear up a whole entire floor, spent thousands of dollars, replace this piping, got it all fixed. But somehow I started getting reviews where people were trying to get, you know, leave their unit because of the gas smell.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no gas smell anymore. They were just reading old reviews and trying to find excuses to get out.
Jeez.
And so, or get discounts.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I'm like, this issue was long fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And even just 2 weeks ago, I got a review on this. Have you ever smelled the gas smell in this building? So,
no.
Yeah. I mean, we're in here all the time.
Well, but, you know, the thing is, too, like, I know what sewer gas smells like, and I know what natural gas smells like. I have a very, very sensitive natural gas, like, sniffer.
Yeah.
Like, as a matter of fact, two times in Carter Lake, I was out walking my dog, and I smelled natural gas, and I went up and knocked on the door and told the residents about it. And I got, like, profusely thanked a couple of times because Black Hills Energy, which is the utility provider there, came, and they found a gas leak at both places. Yeah. So that could have resulted in – I mean, especially if somebody doesn't have a very good, you know, nose, they could die. I mean, you could get, you know, carbon monoxide poisoning. You could, you know, just die from overexposure. The house could blow up. That's happened several times lately in Omaha. Not with me, but, you know, it's been on the news. So, yeah, stay on top of that stuff for sure. But, yeah, it's – so I guess the point to all this is
– reviews can kill you.
Reviews can kill you, and people can try and pull some stuff on you. So you got to make sure – and the more you document and the more you have a good process and system in place for cleaning like you're talking about, I think you can safeguard yourself to an extent on what people can do to, like, affect your livelihood.
And if you're doing short-term, midterm, it is in your best interest to just put every one of your properties on Furnish Finder for the $100 a year and try to get there's no fees that come out of it if you book it that way.
Okay, so, you know, you've been to my penthouse Airbnb that I was talking about. Do you think I should put that on Furnish Finder?
Yes.
So
unless you don't want midterm people.
Well, okay. Knowing what you know about it, what do you think I should charge for it? What's a monthly? Is that what you do? You put it on there and you're like, it's $3,000 a month. And then you just see if anybody hits you up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
is that what you do?
So my two bedroom unit, which yours is a two bedroom, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So my two bedroom unit upstairs, this unit, I get $1,500 for on Furnish Finder.
Yep.
So can I use that in perspective? You know, what's the value to you to have somebody in there over winter?
Yeah, right.
Because you're not that property is going to rent four times a month during the winter.
Yeah, every weekend
in the Midwest. Yeah, right. So if like how much are you making on four weekends? Let's say you rent it out 6 days in a month.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, let's call it $200 a night. Yeah. plus, you know, whatever cleaning, but I don't get any of that.
So you're making about $1,600 in a month during wintertime. That's okay. Pretty much going to be your August through February price.
Yeah. Which I'm still happy with. So, I mean, that's more than I could get as a long-term rental for sure.
I doubt that in that place.
You think so?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I truly do think so. But
What would you rent it for?
That penthouse like that on the top level with all the amenities there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a $2,000 unit all day long.
You think so? Just long-term rental? Okay. What about midterm?
I think you're going to be to $2,000 to $2,500 for a property like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a private elevator, dude.
Yeah.
And it's top of a building and it's sick and you have a private little outside area to smoke a cigar and have a whiskey.
Yeah, or smoke in the unit as apparently somebody did.
Or, you know, if you got some Colorado residents to come in, you got somewhere outside they can hang out, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, ideally, you want to put somebody in there that's going to stay all the time because you want it to be occupied.
Right.
You know, so if that was my property, I don't know your numbers, but I would put it out there for $2,000 just to try to get somebody in there. You know, if you can get somebody in there for 3 months, you know, a traveling nurse or two, you know.
Just get it through winter and then pull it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, all right. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah.
We don't have it out there right now for on Furnished Finder.
You definitely, you know, a property like that, you'd want it to start opening up March, April.
Okay.
And then you want to keep that thing up all the way open until, you know, until August 1st.
All right. Well, this is a good tip. Stay tuned, listeners. I'll let you know the outcome here. But I think I am going to do that. And it's probably coming up on time where that's going to make sense because the booking, I am getting more bookings, which is great. I think, you know, I've had, aside from the 3-star review, it's been all fives and you know, it's a brand new place basically. So
do you have any long future bookings in place right now?
Like, yeah. There's one this weekend. There's one next weekend. There's several in September. There's some in October even.
So that's going to kind of mess you up to try to get a midterm person.
You're right. Yeah.
So,
but I could do it in probably November. That's probably the first month.
You'd want to block that out now.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get a midterm, worst case scenario, if it comes into like the first week of October, then open it up for one more month.
Yeah.
And then go a month at a time until you get a midterm in there.
Okay. Well, that's good feedback. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see. So we should probably get into today's
Golden Nugget.
Today's Golden Nugget is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T to lend. 844 we close or go online jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
So I was thinking about this. When you're starting out and you're trying to learn the basics, right? So you're wanting to be a landlord, you want to own a rental property. Let's say you're starting with your first one. And you're excited, you've read some books, you found Bigger Pockets, you found Rhea Radio podcast and have been a fanboy.
Rhea Radio, and then you found Bigger Pockets.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you've learned some stuff, but you're still not comfortable that you know everything. I was thinking about this because I had a newbie reach out to me and they're like, you know, they asked some law, like, hey, how long do you have to keep someone's stuff before you can dispose of it? And, you know, related to basically somebody abandons the rental unit, they leave behind their personal belongings, they don't notify you, how long do you have to keep it before you can just trash it or sell it or whatever you're going to do? And I was like, I said, you know, it's probably going to make sense for you to read through this. And I sent him a link to the Nebraska landlord-tenant law site. So I sent him a link to that. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. You've gotten on there before, right?
No.
So it's nebraska.gov. So any state is probably your state.gov. And if you go into the search bar and type in landlord tenant law, you're going to pull up all the state statutes. And they're all different, right? Because, you know, Nebraska is going to have different state statutes than Iowa.
But they're going to be all fairly similar.
They'll be similar, but there will be nuances. And there's going to be things like, okay, like Nebraska, you have to have a 7-day notice, right? In Iowa, it's 3-day. So those are differences, right?
Yeah.
So my gold nugget for today is this is a great spot to actually go through and learn. Now, is it fun and sexy and like a podcast that is, you know, super funny like ours to listen to? No, probably not. But it's packed full of like actual laws that you need to know if you're going to own and operate a rental property business.
So if you were just to read through it and we were trying to ad lib and have a little fun with it, how long would that podcast be?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I mean, because there's like, you click on this and it'll like expand and then there's a whole section. It's like getting on the IRS website. Let's put it that way. So there's a lot.
Rough.
But it's, I mean, it covers everything like security deposits. How long do you have before you have to return them? Where do you, you know, like what about pets? What about service animals? Emotional support, blah, blah, blah. There's all this stuff, right, that is really helpful to know if you're owning and operating a rental property that can get you you can not only like get in hot water if you're not following that stuff, but I mean, you can't do the ignorance, you know, just claim ignorance. That does not work in a court of law. Nope. You have to know this stuff if you're owning and operating a business that is in that business, you know. So that's my tip for today is go out, spend some time reading this, especially if you're new, but also even if you're experienced, because there's stuff in there that I'll kind of like go there and reference, or if I'm trying to look something up and just to make sure I'm covering my bases, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I forgot about that, or I didn't remember doing that, or I didn't even know that.
So I've taken hours and hours of courses on this, but I've never gone to the site and read up on it. But if I was self-managing my properties, this is something I would use as a reference.
Yeah, for sure. So that's today's
golden nugget. Have you had any cool meetings with anybody in the last week or two? Something I haven't asked you in a while.
No, you haven't. And there's been a lot. I've met with a bunch of different people, but I've had just different weird stuff happened lately, but I had a meeting yesterday with the TIF, the city TIF official for the city of Ralston.
Tax increment financing.
Thank you. Yep. And basically we were talking about a mixed use property that I bought with some partners. So I own this building with Colin Schwartz, Chris Palmerloo, and Brandon Tauber. So we all own that together. We bought it a while back. We're trying to figure out what the hell to do with it. Are we going to make it into 8 units? Are we going to have some commercial? What does the city really want to see? And so we met with an architect, the city code inspector, the city TIF planning dude, and then our Tanner Gordon, shout out.
Oh, yeah.
My
new business partner.
Exactly. We met, Tanner is going to be doing the construction on it. So he was there too. And then, you know, three of the four owners, Chris was probably getting a mani-pedi or something, but, we met there and, went through basically what does the city want to see here? What is going to make you happy? What could we possibly qualify for when it comes to tax increment financing? Is there grant money available? What could the city do to help us with the parking situation if we added more residential units than what will currently be supported? So all that really productive meeting, and having the city code dude there was handy too, because normally it's like the worst thing in the world to have a city inspector standing inside your property that's, you know, like in rough shape.
I mean, he must have appreciated that so much.
Yeah. Well, but we went through and we're like, okay, what if we did this? Or what if we did this? Or what if we did this? And it was funny because I was thinking of Tanner, you know, your little rant that you went on with him on the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have a deck that's like tall. And like, I have no idea if the pilings were done right and all that. And I was like, hey, look, it's a TED deck. I said that yesterday to Tanner. He thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I bet he did.
And so we met with all them. And then we were like, okay, if you open, you know, let's say you change 50% of the property and maybe you open up walls as part of it, right? So you're changing the mechanicals, you're opening up walls. If you change more than 50% of the use of something, it's more than likely you're going to have to bring the whole thing up to code. And this is depending on your city and your statutes and whatever. But for the most part, that's pretty much international building code.
Fire suppressant systems.
Yes. Yeah. And so we talked specifically about that because they're like, oh, and this is funny because, you know, the architect we had, great guy, but he's like, oh, well, you know, there are certain benefits to adding fire suppression and this and that. And, you know, you can do a couple things that he mentioned or whatever. I go, yeah, but what you're asking is, hey, do you guys want to pay $200,000 more for this project? I'm like, no, we don't want to pay $200,000 more. He's like, well, yeah, I understand that. But I guess when you're dealing with city officials and people that don't have a vested interest in your project, they talk about things that are nice to have or things that, you know, could be a feature of the property, but they're not the ones writing the check for it. So there's a dichotomy there a lot of times with the people that want to see you do certain things, and then you're only able to do certain things because of cash flow or your business plan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting meeting, seeing the dynamic of everybody involved with that. When you have builder, code inspector, architect, TIF, and ownership all in one spot. It was really interesting to listen to how that whole conversation like flowed.
That's why you didn't have that video recorded.
I know. It was in a dark basement, though. So
I saw your picture that you put.
I'm not kidding either. It was like pitch black down there.
So I make a point, and I think I brought this up past, but I make a point that every one of my units has fire extinguishers inside of it. Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. You have to.
You read
the Nebraska Landlord Tenant Act.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. You have to have a fire extinguisher, not necessarily fire sprinklers, but...
Okay, so yeah, I put a fire extinguisher in every kitchen,
yep.
and then this particular building, I have them in every kitchen and every hall, and then every level of the hallway.
Yep, yeah. So you have to have access in common areas, and I'd have to look at the state statute closely on that, but like in a multifamily property, you have to have clear access from in one hallway on each level, I believe is what it is, and you have to provide directions where like. You know, fire extinguisher this way, and you have to have a little sign or whatever. I think is the deal.
I also have that in my single family, so too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all required.
So every rental unit, you're supposed to have a fire suppression. You know, like not fire suppression, but essentially fire extinguisher.
I feel so above and beyond now.
You are. Look at you. I had just going the extra mile.
But I'm not. the other thing I did the other day is I went and put signage everywhere because during the College World Series, I had a lot of complaints about like, I couldn't find which way to the units.
Yep.
So I had custom signs put up everywhere throughout the building, inside and out.
So, yeah, it's great. Yeah, much better.
And then also with that, I went and bought like the reflective exit signs.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way in heck I'm going to pay all the money if I don't have to wire light up exit signs
for
this building because it is expensive. And the wiring in this is not up to date, mostly up to date. Sorry. And
any city code inspector listening to this, just we'll edit
that. It's got a newer box. And anyway, so I was like talking to a guy, and he's like starting to put the bids together for me. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna put stickers up for right now.
Yeah.
So I stickered everything.
So this is interesting though, because I think I may have mentioned this before in a previous episode, but. I got just out of the blue a notice from the fire department, the Omaha Fire Department, that said, hey, we need to come and look at your property. It's been like years and years and years and years since they had been in it. So several ownership changes. I don't know if it was 20 years ago or whenever the last time they were in there was. And I'm like
great.
Yeah, exactly. And so they came in and they basically required, they gave us like 30 days to change all the doors into like self-closing mechanisms. All of them. And then there were other, and we had to put signage up, and then we had to get special hinges. And these are like metal doors, right? So it's not like easy to do that. It's not like wood where you can just, you know, fix.
Oh, you remember when the front door here was getting done?
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. So that cost me like, I don't know, $7,000-$8,000 for all the doors and all the additional stuff that I had to put up just because they happened to call that month.
What were the other things?
So it was like self-closing, and then you had to have, I think we had to have another fire hydrant, or not fire hydrant, fire extinguisher added in a hallway. We had to make because I have like three balcony patios, like pretty big ones, and we had to do something with the fire escape, and it had to be labeled differently and then like set up differently, and that wasn't cheap. And then, yeah, the hinges were not cheap, and then the pass through doors in the lobby. We had to change some stuff on that. We had to put signage up. That was the most of it. But it was like hinges and signage and self closing stuff, and then the fire escape, and it was just all that stuff. And then like my point to this is you got to have reserves, because I mean if you're just kind of going bare bones and being like, hey, I'm just living off of cash flow here and paying the debt, and there's not much left over, or maybe you're trying to like just pay yourself out of it. Like you got to be careful with that, because. You know, if I wasn't well capitalized or if I didn't have adequate reserves for that, I'd be like, I don't have $7,000. And if that fire department's like, you got to do this like next month, like it's not like you have a choice, you know?
You'd be whipping out your credit card.
Exactly. So that's, you know, today's golden nugget number two.
Ooh, I love two golden nuggets.
That's
the
right.
Same day.
Who doesn't?
I mean, does it make you wonder, like, did this just randomly happen, or was what triggered this? Like,
yeah, that's a right.
What was the underlying thing? Is this something they were driving by and just said, when's the last time we walked in that? Or was there like an instance, or did it get flat, or did somebody report something?
Probably the latter, I would guess. I would guess something happened. Somehow something that popped up on the radar. Or it could have been, I know there was a fire that was close by in Midtown where this property's located. the whole building burned. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that
Ryan
one.
Ryan Basie owns it, I think.
Yeah, and then there was another one that caught on fire that Chad Beeman out of Lincoln owned, like real close by, like a block away. So maybe it was that. Maybe they just said, hey, look, we've had several of these. Let's just go around these older buildings and make sure they're up to code. And that's probably what
I could
happened.
Totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that, great tips there, and things that and just for just putting it out there, the insurance thing we mentioned, we'll get in more depth later. But if you're buying a 4-story building, please note that your insurance is not the same when it comes to multifamily insurance. So, just we'll dig more into it deeper when Owen is ready to vent about it. But just be prepared that your insurance is not the same for a 4-story versus a 3-story. So keep that in mind.
Yep.
Well, all this is exciting, and I think we could probably go for another 45 minutes on this, but we have an amazing podcast with
Mutah Kaybon.
Let's get into that now. Mutah Kaybon!
That was really disappointing with how well you did that. I was expecting multiple takes and Dentless to come in and have to edit this and make it something funny.
Well, so. I've known Mutah for a little while. All so right. Unlike you, I didn't have to ask him how to pronounce his first name.
Oh, really? Because it seemed like you have been stumbling over it before we hit record for a long time now.
The last name, yeah. Yes.
I heard Cobain, K-pop, I think.
I never said K-pop.
Caban. So don't come all high and mighty with your pronunciation skills here, all right, Ted?
You know what? I didn't have to put my glasses on to see it, so I could read it just fine.
Okay, cheap shots. Yeah, here. Yeah. Okay, we're setting the tone.
Mutah's like, what did I walk into here?
Yeah. Mutah, thanks for coming, man. Apparently, Ted's been turning you down repeatedly for coming on the show. I don't know why.
There's a really high bar here, buddy.
But I have to ask you, so you have three boys, right? 16, 9, and 6. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you literally have no wrinkles at all on your face or your head. What's going on with that? Why don't we get all these guests that look so fantastic compared to me? How old are you?
We're like the same age, aren't we?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So 43.
No, actually, I'm a little older than Ted.
Okay.
48?
45.
Damn it.
Right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you look good. So whatever you're doing, I don't know what it is, but keep it up, man.
Thank you.
When you said you had a 16-year-old, I was like, oh, my God. I thought you were like 30.
No.
That would have been tricky. All right. I don't know. What?
Why do you keep looking?
Because it's funny that you always go right to the age. Oh, I do that because I'm self-conscious now, thanks to you. I have a complex.
You know, my wife puts these like snail skins on her face to get rid of the wrinkles.
Does she?
Yeah. Do you want me to find out what that is and pass it on to you?
I'm sure she really appreciates you bringing that up on here. Snail skin?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's the thing they put on around her eyes and it takes all the wrinkles away.
Ted.
And I go, Ted, think how many snails died for you.
Ted, be careful. You might be in a doghouse today.
Oh, my wife is so hot, it doesn't matter.
Wow. That's a good comeback right there.
All right, Mutah, what's your story, man? So we're sitting here in the Omaha, Nebraska studios of Rio Radio. You're joining us in person, which is awesome.
But not drinking an old fashioned.
That
with
is,
us.
Yeah. He also turned down a glass of milk. So
the mega burrito. He did.
Oh, my God. I wish when we get eventually in 2028, when we have video, you should see the size of the burritos that Ted eats. So he's like, hey, sends a picture, and it's like this, you know, a size of a small baby.
It goes from here to – it goes from my wrist to my
– yeah, his bicep. Yeah. So it is monstrous. So I'm actually – I was like – and normally I make fun of him about it, but I'm like, God, that kind of sounds good today. So I'm like, any of that left? He's like, oh, yeah, I got one for you or whatever. And so I hack off like – I don't know, a fourth of it. And I am stuffed right now. And I come out and Ted's like, are you all done? I'm like, yeah, I got like, have you had any yet? He's like, yeah, yeah, I had mine. I go, you ate the whole thing? Like, I am impressed because, like, I think you could give that dude that always wins the hot dog eating championship.
No way. I gagged when I watched that the other day. But I just like you, I had a little bit of a rough night last night. I went to a cigar whiskey tasting, and it's my monthly cigar club I go to, and I needed to put some food in the stomach, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's stop talking about Ted's gag reflex. Mutah, how did you end up in Omaha, man? Where was home originally for you?
Togo is a home.
Togo?
Yeah, West Africa.
All right.
So I moved here in 2003 in the middle of winter. And
had you ever, like, okay, forget my ignorance here. Yeah. Had you ever been to a place with with winters like we have?
No.
What was that like?
I want to go back right away.
I bet.
It was that cold.
Yeah.
But I ended up staying. I came here to go to college. And so I love the culture in Nebraska, the Midwest. People are kind of, if they don't know you, it's hard. But once you get to make friends, you make friends for life.
Meaning they're fairly friendly people here and loyal once you form a relationship, right?
They are friendly, but they kind of like, you got to make the first step.
Okay, got it.
Once you make that first step, I got family, I got friends all over the state, all over the Omaha.
Yeah.
You know, so I love it. I've been here for, 20 years now? It's going to be 20 years. And I couldn't ask for a better state or better place to be, even though it's cold in the winter, and I love it.
Well, clearly you need to get out more. But anyway, what happened when you were in Togo? So you're a lawyer. Am I wrong there? Are you? I assume non-practicing.
I am not a lawyer.
Well, you went to law school.
I went to law school.
In Togo.
Yes, but I didn't finish. So technically, yes, technically I am not a lawyer. And technically, I can't even fathom the idea to say I'm a lawyer. So
could you be a lawyer in Togo?
I could have if I finished my degree there, but I didn't. I just, I want to move to the States and I want to go to school here. And that was more.
So important. I'm assuming they don't have Google in Togo because clearly you didn't Google what has the best weather in which state has the best weather in the United States. Because you ended up in like the worst spot.
You went all the seasons.
No, well, here's the thing. The truth is, they do have Google, but
I'm kidding about that.
I know.
Part.
The funny thing is, when it was a summer when I was applying for this to come here, it was gorgeous, golf courses, all the stuff. I'm like, this is gonna be the place to be. So, start the process like May of 2003. Everything was set, done, ready to move to the United States. In October, and I still didn't think that's going to snow that bad.
Yeah.
I was wearing light jackets, and that was a big mistake when we landed.
We like to call this the Megan Ahern effect, because she came here to visit or was checking out the Lincoln market, and I think she happened to catch, like, you know, the 1 week out of the year where we have perfect weather.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, my God, this place is awesome. And yeah, the gorgeous people are so nice. Yeah. And then so she tells her husband about it. Yeah. They pack up and move here. And he's like, what the F, man? They roll into town and there's like a blizzard going on, 50 mile an hour winds or whatever. Uh-huh.
Well, now they moved to Maui. Yeah. I called her yesterday morning.
I texted her, too. Yeah.
And I texted, I should say. But, yeah, she's like, yeah, we had to evacuate, but we're all good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Scary stuff, man. Yeah. Yeah. So, today, this week is the, this will probably air, I don't know, 3-4 weeks from now. But yeah, this is really scary in Maui, and a lot of the island got just decimated.
Yeah.
So, Mutah, let me kind of backtrack. When I first met you, I met you through Colin Schwartz, which is probably one of the most mentioned names on this podcast, second to us.
Yeah.
And what is the history that you guys have that brought this relationship together?
Yeah, so
because Owen really wants to know, because he's super jealous that you actually get call back and he gets snubbed.
Yeah, he was just bragging before we recorded. Well, Colin's always responsive and super nice over text. I'm like, well, that must be nice.
It is, actually. It is.
Ignores me all the time.
So here's the story behind that. So Colin and I worked for Hy-Vee. We didn't work at the same store.
Which is a supermarket, Midwest
retail, yeah.
Supermarket.
And you guys were the friendly smiles in different aisles, though.
We were, yeah. Yes. So what happened is, when you get to a certain level, you get to know everyone in the same level. Mm-hmm. So we knew each other. like, okay, Colin is a assistant store director at this location. Muta is assistant store director at this location. So we knew of each other. And then what it's funny, Colin and I are friends on LinkedIn, and on my feed I receive a message saying Colin was talking about it's got a 430 some units. I'm like, wait a minute. I work with this guy. Is this a joke? What did he do? So I message him. Say, hey, Colin, it's Muta. He says, hey, what's up, man? What's going on? You know, Colin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, I would love to pick your brain and understand what you are doing. He was like, well, text me tomorrow. I have between, I think it was still working at his 9-to-5 job at that point.
Mm-hmm. Positions Mutual.
Yes, yes. So it was still working. He was like, I will be off at 4. I'm taking my family on weekend. We're going to take a weekend off. Just call me between 4 and 5 and we can chat. So
401, you're calling him.
Oh, I am calling him. So I call him. He pick up the phone. He says, what's up, man? And we kind of BS a little bit. What's going on? You left Hy-Vee and we all talk about it. I'm like, where are you now? I'm like, I'm Mutual of Omaha and, you know, all that stuff. How you liking? I'm like, oh, I love it. The hours are great. I don't have to work weekend. All those jazz, right? And I'm like, okay, the reason for my call, what are you doing right now? He goes like, I'm just buying a real estate and I have small company, people invest with me. And I'm like, what is the return? He was like, well, I can guarantee you 7%. I'm like, 7% on my money? He was like, yeah. Like, I got money sitting in a bank account. I'm getting 4 and I'm super happy. He goes like, are you sure this is legit? He goes like, dude, yes, it is legit. But here's what I'm going to ask you. Have you read this book called Rich Dad Poor Dad? I'm like, no. He goes like, go buy it. Let's talk next weekend. I'm like, okay. I bought a book. I read it in 2 days. Mm-hmm. I didn't wait for the next weekend. I'm texting him. He was like, I'll call you when I between this. He always has a time. Like, you got to call between those. And he called. And we chat a little bit. And I'm like, so what if I want to buy my own? And he was like, well, do you want to invest or do you want to buy your own? And I'm like, I might want to do both. He was like, okay, here's this book. Go read that and call me back in a week.
What was this book?
That was Gary Keller
with One Thing?
No, the
Millionaire Real Estate
Investor. Millionaire Real Estate Investor. And I'm like,
great book.
I went and bought it. I mean, at nighttime, I'm reading this thing like it's going out of style. I'm writing things and I'm like, I'm getting more involved right quick.
Excited.
Get it. And so 3 days later, I call him. He goes like, dude, we thought a week. Can we talk on a weekend? I'm like,
he's like, slow down, man.
Yes, yeah.
I'm trying to give you homework.
Yes,
keep overachieving.
Yes. And he goes like, well, he has 5 books. I can't think of the names to say. Just buy them, start reading them, and next week when we talk. So I think his point is, like, I'm giving you one, and you're finishing that quick, right? I'm giving you 5, and I will see how you're going to do it.
So he's kind of like a librarian.
Correct.
Okay.
So I went to my wife. I give her the list. I say, can you order me all those books? She says, what's this? I'm like, just order me the books. So she did.
Do you remember the 5?
Yeah, I will get that to you guys.
We'll put it in the show notes if you send it to me.
Yes, okay. Yes. So I just ordered the books, start reading them. I think one of them was The Millionaire Next Door. I think it was also Burt.
The Burr Method.
Yes. Dave Green. And there's more. So I bought all of them and start reading. Then I'm like, I went to my wife. I'm like, if I'm understanding what Colin's doing, I think I can do it. So I couldn't find anything to buy in Omaha. Mm-hmm. So I have a half brother that lives in Illinois in Quad Cities. So I went to visit him. And instead of spending time with the family, I just went out and started looking at real estate. Found a few stuff there, and I called Colin. Say, Colin, I found this place. It's triplex with the storefront, and I want to buy it. And Colin goes like, okay, I love the way you're taking things. Everything that I'm asking you to do, you're doing it. That's really good. But who's going to manage it? It's asking me those questions, like, how are you going to oversee that. What if the tenant doesn't pay the rent? If you get a call in the middle of the night, do you have a system set up? I'm like, well, I know, but I will figure it out. I was like, okay. So came back, discussed with my wife, and I'm like, this is not going to work. So I back out. Because a 7 hours drive from Omaha to Illinois, how am I going to manage that? And then I'm just looking. I'm putting my name out there. I'm reaching out to realtors, bankers, like whatever I can just think of. I'm just reaching out to people. And there was this deal that finally found this. I think it was like 15-plex in a small town, Auburn, Nebraska.
What town?
Auburn.
Auburn.
Yes.
Auburn,
okay. Nebraska.
Okay.
And
how far is that from here, from Omaha?
Like 2 hours.
Okay.
Yep. So drove there, run the number. That place is a cash cow. They want to sell us for $150,000.
For a 15 unit?
For 15 unit. It is a functional. People are living there. And
you so buy storage units for that.
And I'm doing my research. The place was sold 2 years back for $350,000. Then I'm like, what happened? Talk to the seller. He was like, I'm moving. My wife inherit this property. We don't want it. We don't want to be landlords. You want it, it's yours. Wrote an offer. Went to the bank. Interest rate was back like
two and a half.
But the bank didn't know me.
The good old days.
They want to charge me 4% because they didn't know me.
Oh, deal breaker.
I'm like, sure, 4%, let's do it. Wrote them 25% down. This thing is bringing $5,300 a month. My mortgage was like maybe $600 or something like that. It's just crazy. So
yeah.
I'm sending that to Colin. I'm like, hey, Colin, this is what I found. I'm going to close in a month. And Colin goes like, is this like hotel? I'm like, I think it used to be. And he was like, well, so what is your end game? What are you going to do? Is it you're going to hold it forever? You're going to sell it? What is the market going to look like? And it's asking me those questions. I'm like, damn, this guy. So I have the finance already set up. It's ready to close. And I call the local bank in the town. And I say, hey, I would love for you guys to finance this deal. And the local banker told me, he goes like, yeah, give me your information. I sent them everything. I'm qualified. I know I'm going to. That's not a big deal. And they denied me. They denied my loan. I'm like,
that's weird.
That's weird. I'm like, I can buy this thing cash. Why are they denying me?
Yeah.
So I called the banker. Say, hey, when you deny someone, you got to give them a reason. What's the reason? He goes, well, we live in town. Do you know how many times this place have been on market and how many times had changed hands? We do not want to be associated with that. There is something that the seller's not telling you and we can tell you. So if you want to go with it, that's your thing. If you don't, that's also your thing, but we are not going to finance it. So
red flag.
Yes.
No, that's a good soundbite, though, about small town banks, which we just talked about in the last episode on. That was my golden nugget, actually, was work with small town banks.
Yep.
This is another thing that we didn't bring up, though.
Yep.
Those banks likely know all the properties in the town. Like, if you work with a small one, they're going to have intel on it. And if they don't finance it, there's probably a good reason.
Correct.
Right?
So the guy wrote me a letter, rejection letter, says, hey, put some weird reasons there. So I called the seller and say, hey, the bank refused to finance us, so I'm sorry, we can't go through this. So we didn't go through this. And I have zero. Then.
So can you attribute this, you not getting this deal also to Colin?
Yes and no.
It seems like he's kind of the deal killer.
No, it's not. Actually, okay. Actually, I think he helped me a lot. Because, so I'm going to switch back a little bit. The reason why I said I'm going to back up a little bit. When we talk about the mentor is there to guide you. They don't make a decision for you. And Colin was doing that. Although he never accept, if you ask him today, he'll be like, no, I don't mentor Muta, but he is. Mm-hmm. Because somebody to make a time to give you their 2 cents. and telling you this, asking you a question to make you think, that really helped me. So I didn't buy it. The cash flow was great. I didn't buy it.
Did you ever find out what the reason was that they wouldn't do it? Did you ever find the underlying issues?
So what I've found out is there's a family dynamic. So this gentleman is telling me that his wife inherited this property. It looks like she has a siblings also that are not agreeing that she's going to get it. It's just the dynamic. It's bad blood. And there's more into it that because I wasn't buying it, I didn't go too much in details. I just trust the banker because they don't have any reason for me to not buy it. Right. So I just, as soon as they say all those kind of stuff. And I also had a lady that works for me when I was at Hy-Vee and she lives in town. So I called her and say, you know this building? She says, yes. I say, would you buy it? Her husband is a farmer. Would you buy it? She says, no, absolutely not. And I say, why? I said, but the people that live there, there's a lot of sketchy things that's going out there. So those two reasons was just like, okay. And plus, I don't live in town. It's 2 hours away. It's better than Illinois, but it is still, you know.
15 years for 150. I don't know if I can say no to that.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so let me, well, I want to ask you one more question on this, and then we can move on to something else, but
yeah,
you hit the brakes on buying the, close to Illinois border, the first deal, the triplex, I think you said, with the storefront.
Yep.
You backed out of that because of the distance, and then Colin asked you, what are you going to do about managing it?
Yep.
And you're kind of like, oh, crap, yeah, I didn't think of that. What were you planning on? How were you planning on managing the one in Auburn, Nebraska, that's 2 hours away?
So the seller has a guy that is a maintenance guy that lives in town.
Okay.
And the guy will be like my go-to guy.
Okay. So he had a contact for you.
Yes. Every time that if there's an issue, I will call Mitch. That was his name. And Mitch will take care of it and bill me by the hour.
Okay.
And he charged $20 per hour. So yeah. That's kind of – and. I, at that point, I was asking Austin, too, because Austin and I were
Austin from Orange Property Management?
Yes, yep. I was asking him if they go that far. He says, well, as a 2 hours radius that we do, we don't have any management on that, but it's something that we can entertain. So kind of like after also as if it were to work, I might go with Austin to manage that, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. So what ended up being your first deal after a couple of failed attempts at starting your... empire.
So my first deal was three triplexes in Bennington.
Okay.
That was my very first deal when I bought. So what happened is the seller is selling all three at the same time. You can buy one. You have to buy all three. And it was where the interest rate was like zero almost. Mm-hmm. But the advantage I had at that point, I had a cash at the I had a cash to buy it. I also know the bankers. I know some key players, realtors. And so I don't have a property, but I knew what I was kind of like what I'm getting to, right? So I made an offer. My offer was full asking price, and we put an escalation clause in it up to 50 grand. And I will beat anybody up to 50 grand more than asking price.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So
that's risky.
It is risky, but I did my math. Now, I went to school for business, and I'm good with numbers. So I knew that it wasn't too risk. I mean, the risk was minimum for me, and I think I could do it. So we wrote an offer Saturday at midnight. I get the offer will expire at midnight, and I'm awake. Waiting to hear back. My realtor didn't call me. And then the next day he called and he goes like, are you sitting down? And I'm like, I don't like those questions. What you got? He goes like, well, congratulations. I'm like, we got it. He goes like, yeah. I say, how much? He goes like, well, you're the only one.
$1 billion.
Says, you're the only one that our offer was so clean that the seller was excited to partner with you. And also your earnest deposits was also bigger than everybody else. So they knew that you're going to close no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for people listening, can you explain what you mean by a clean offer?
Clean offer was, okay, no inspection. If I do inspection, it's for my own knowledge. I will buy as it is. You don't have to fix anything. And then I add an escalation clause in it. I will pay $50,000 more than anybody that's gonna with 1,000 increments. So,
oh, okay. All right. I'm glad you clarified that because correct. I thought you were saying like if somebody made a dollar higher offer than you, your next offer would be $50,000 higher than that. That was a little risky, and I was sitting there thinking like that was kind of dumb. But yeah. I'm glad you clarified that.
So basically, the asking price was a $551. I offer them, I will match up to $600.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that wrote an offer above that, but with an increment of 1,000. So if Owen were to write 560, I will get the deal at 561.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. So that's what we did.
I lost out on yesterday, I lost out on an 8-plex. For I wrote it with an escalation clause up to, it was like $26,000 above asking.
Yeah.
So I wrote it for full price, $26,000 above, and didn't get it.
Yeah.
And the person that did get it wrote basically an unlimited escalation clause above by $2,500. So whatever I offered, they would go up to $2,500 over that on with a no cap.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty interesting. I've never done that. And my realtor clarified. He's like, yeah, well, you have the option then at that point
to back out.
Yeah. And, yes. And so it's really and some agents hate escalation clauses. Are you one of them, Ted?
I don't like them, but in the same boat, they are part of the business.
Can you? Yes. Okay. Let's if this is okay, yeah. I want to describe a little bit more about this and maybe dig into what an escalation clause is and isn't and why it pisses off realtors sometimes and so forth. What are the pros and cons with this? Ted, will you give us your take on this as a commercial realtor?
Commercial realtor.
Yeah.
I mean, the pros of it are that you're putting it out there that you can actually pay up this, but you're ideally going to be paying less. So, if in this case, you're like, hey, I'll pay $600, but the price I really want it for is $550, right?
Yeah.
And so it puts it out there that if your client could possibly save some money. On the other side, though, if you're the seller of the property, it's a little frustrating to see that somebody's willing to pay $600, but they're not willing to go up to $600. And there is some shady individuals out there that will have people write offers just to get that offer price up.
So you're saying, let's say Mutah, you're selling a property. Mutah comes along and he offers $100,000 with an escalation to $150. But he only offered $100 initially,
and I have no other offers.
And there's
no
other offers. So you're saying you could call somebody like me to come along and say, "Hey, I have this guy. He's offering this. Can you come along and offer $149 or whatever?" And then that automatically jumps his escalation clause to $150. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I've never done that,
you're describing what could happen. Though.
This could happen, and then there's also the fact that as the listing agent. In that, it will say, hey, well, this is the offer I got. Well, the buyer's agent can say, well, then I want to see the offer that I'm competing against.
Right.
To do their research, and in which they should always ask for that.
Yep.
So that's a key tip out of this.
Yes.
And David Green, which has got one of the biggest KW branches in the country, he won't allow his clients to do escalation offers. He always preaches, he's like, if this is what it takes to get the deal, let's just write it and get it done so that way we're not dealing with back and forth actions here and there.
Well, if I may, I will say that you're correct.
You may.
And David Green is one of the brightest minds out there, right? But my struggle is, so Owen just lost a deal yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume that the deal that he was going to buy was $1 million. And David's telling him, hey, if you're willing to offer $1,025,000, go for it. He's still going to lose. So that's why I love the escalation clause. I can do the what the other guy did to beat him. I also have the option to back out. Yeah. If, because that guy could be like 2 million. I'll go unlimited. But then he wrote an offer. Unless he really want to F him up. He says, okay, I'm going to write it for 1.19 and the other guys can get it and just get him out of the market so he doesn't even have any more money. But he can also back out. So I love the escalation clause. I really do. I too, like you, lost a deal about 2 weeks ago. I wrote an offer, paid $25,000 more than asking price. The asking price was $330,000, and I said I will pay up to $360,000, actually, $360,000. The other person, mine is actually a cash offer. Mm-hmm. I will close in 2 weeks as soon as the the title work comes out. They went with the other guy because I have that cap. And the only difference is $5,000. Now, if I knew that, I would pay that $5,000. But because of that, I lost the deal. I lost the deal because I couldn't just put unlimited and I want to see the offer before it goes.
Yeah. And see, me as a buyer, I also love escalation clauses. Like they make sense to me and it gives me the opportunity to maybe
feel like you got a deal.
Buy something where I would have just missed if I would have said, oh, I'm only going to pay $1 million and then it comes in at like $1.1 million. And I never had the opportunity to go above that. Like that's why I like escalation clauses, kind of like eBay, right? Yeah. You can, you can bid up to a certain amount and then you can put on an auto bid after that. That's basically what an escalation clause is.
That's
like eBay.
That's right.
But
it definitely puts your cards on the table of what you're willing to pay.
I just I understand to a point why realtors don't like escalation clauses. But here's my take on it. Quit being a little bitch if you're a realtor. Like, do your job.
That's
like,
right.
Present offers, make your client more money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Your job is to get the deal done for your client. You have a fiduciary responsibility to get them extract the most money and value out of that deal, period.
That's
for
right.
your client. Am
That's
I wrong?
Right. No. And the line I use when I get escalation offers from somebody, and especially if it's the first offer on the table and I know my client will take it, I'll go right to my client. Like, hey, this is what's on the table. And then I'll ask for permission. I'm like, hey, can we just say that if they're willing to go right to the top of the price, that we're willing just to be done with this?
Yeah.
So that will be I'll counter back.
Mm-hmm. And that is a great move as a realtor.
Right to the top. I'm like, hey, I will take this off the table right now.
If.
No BS. I won't deal with anybody else if you go right to your top price. Because they put all their cards on the table. So I'm willing to put my cards on the table and move on.
Yep.
But it's kind of poker a little bit.
It is.
You know what I mean? When you throw an escalation clause in there, you're saying, hey, I could buy this for this. $200,000, but I'm only offering $150,000.
Oh, that's well,
and it's so it's kind of like, you know what I mean? You're showing your stuff and they haven't showed theirs yet. And they're like, well, I see you, but I'm gonna counter because you said you could pay $200,000, so I'm gonna call you on that.
Owen, you told me that you want to sell it for $150,000.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to offer the $150,000, but I see the value that's going to be on the property. So I'm willing to pay more, but this is what you ask.
Yeah. I just, I know it's just so it's weird because people think like they just have these opinions about it and they're like, you know what? F that. I'm not even going to like, they have to present it legally, but they could tell the seller like, don't take this.
Yeah.
I can get blah, blah, blah. I know that stuff happens behind the scenes. I know it does.
Yep.
So I had to bring that up because escalation clauses, I don't think we've really dug into those. And it's interesting to see the dynamic between seller, buyer, realtor how they like it and how they don't and what happens on the back end of that. So I'm glad we kind of went through that a little bit.
So I mean, to finish that story, I paid $551. So 1,000 more, and nobody saw. I don't know if they didn't see the value or anything like that. Next door me, there was another triplex that was sold for $250,000. So when we did the appraisal, it was appraised at $750,000.
Oh,
so
nice.
Day one, I was working in with $200,000 equity, and from that was just my start.
Killer.
And I'm like, okay, I'm in now. Yes, I never look back. I'll just buying and keep going and keep going.
You know, I remember those. There were three of them, right?
Yes.
And they were owned by the same seller.
Correct.
They were, yeah.
Yes.
Were they all in a row?
Yes.
Am I remember? Okay. Yes. I remember those.
Yes.
I really considered that too, but I was like, God, I don't know anything about Bennington. Man. I don't have a manager. They'll go out there and like, that's funny that it's you. Because that was a few years
ago. You know, the funny thing is I knew Bennington. I know it's a hot market. People love to live in Bennington. The school district is amazing, better than any school district in the state. So I'm looking at that, and I have those information in my pocket. And I'm like, okay, it's only 25-minute drive from my house. I am going to take it. So I call Colin again. I call my mentor.
Your deal killer. He's your lifeline. Yeah.
I call him. I say, hey, just want to let you know, I bought this. I closed on it yesterday. This is why he goes like,
oh, you called him after you closed. That was the difference. So he's been talking about
No. I mean, I think at this one, he would have said, go for it because he lives in Bennington.
Yeah.
So he knew the area. So when I called him and I told him that, he goes like, man, this is awesome. Let's talk more about your next step. And that was like, your father's giving you, and sorry, Colin, I know I'm older than you, but it's like your father's giving
He's
you,
just
finally,
you,
it's just, yes, just giving you that okay to do the next step. So anyway, yeah. So Colin, if you're listening, I'm keep saying your name because you got me started, and here I am talking at the radio with the awesome two awesome great guys, so.
All right, let's end the Colin Schwartz fanboy like segment.
Yeah, because he was like 89 episodes ago.
Was it?
He's old news. We love you, Colin.
Yeah.
So nine units to start off. Now, we didn't ask this, but why did you decide to jump right into multifamily instead of going the normal route, which most people do, is single family? What happened? Did Colin get in your ear about that too?
No. So here's what I'm going to tell you guys. Back in 2010, I bought my first house. So, and for totally for transparency here, I paid $150,000, 5% down, and I have a $5,000 left in my savings account. I did not know how this is going to work. I was scared to death. And I sat here and I'm like, okay, if the roof or anything big ticket goes wrong, I'm effed. Mm-hmm. So as I'm processing this.
And did your wife know this?
Yes.
And how did she handle that?
Oh, no, we weren't married at that point. Oh,
okay.
So I was just a single guy.
Okay.
Bought a house in 2010, right? So I was sitting there and I'm thinking, those two guys that I work with at Hy-Vee live together in two bedroom and paying $800 to their landlord. So I approach them and I say, I just bought a house. It's three bedroom, two bath, two car garage, fence. Come with this. Would you mind moving in with me and have your own room? I will park on the street. You guys can take the garage. And they go like, how much you want to charge us for rent? And I say, each one of you will pay me $500. Okay? Oh, and hear this out. $500. They go like, they did the math. They're saving $300 each. So each.
Oh, wait. They were paying $800 each, not each, total. Okay.
Each.
Got it. Yeah.
So each one of them will pay me $500 and to move into my house.
Mm-hmm.
They moved in. I gave them the garage. Do you want to know my mortgage?
What was your mortgage?
$896.
Nice.
So both guys were paying my mortgage and we split all the utilities, MUD, OPPD, all cable. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing.
But you had to walk through the snow to get into the house.
I did not care.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I did not care about that.
Did he include lawn care and shoveling in this?
They do all that with me. We all do it together.
Oh, nice.
So it was just like...
So that was your first deal, really?
That was my very first deal.
Okay.
So you were an investor before you knew it.
Yes.
House hacker.
I did not know what I was doing, but it was amazing.
You know, my first investment deal was me buying my grandma's house to help her out. So I feel you because sometimes you run into those first deals and you really don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But you're really building... you're putting those first stones down for your future.
Man, mm-hmm. I tell you what, it was really good. So I have enough money that I went back to the bank and say, hey, I want to change my loan to 15 years mortgage. that's because I wasn't educated. I didn't know. So I went back, get my loan redone, and those guys stayed there with me for 2 years. Mm-hmm. In the period of 2 years, I got promoted to move to another city. I was still working my full-time job. I didn't know I was a landlord. I didn't know all that stuff because I just lived there with them. Now, those guys, they call me. One is getting serious with his girlfriend. He's going to move with her. The other one is going to move out. I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? Started dating my wife. We were dating. My wife also has a house. So now we have two houses. I don't know. And I post my house on Craigslist. Get a lady. She just moving from another state. She rented from me, paying me $1,250. Back then, $1,250 for a house is huge, right? She covered the mortgage. I still have $150 left or something like that. So I went to Lincoln for work. 6 months in the deal, the lady called me. She said, I like Nebraska, so I ended up buying a house. When can I give you the keys? I'm like, no, lady. You signed a contract for 1 year. She was like, I'm sorry. It's not going to work for me. I will pay the penalties. I'm sweating. Like, okay, how am I going to do this? So she felt...
Can we dig into that? What was the penalties at the time? Like for somebody that's in this situation?
2 months.
2 months rent?
Yeah. She will just pay 2 months and out.
Okay.
And...
Is that pretty... I don't do traditional rentals. I do short-term, mid-term. So is that pretty standard for a lease break?
Most of the time, you're technically on the hook for the remainder of the lease unless the owner markets and gets it leased, right? So that's usually how it works. So like, let's say you break a lease 6 months into it. Technically, you're going to owe me six more months of rent.
Correct.
But I have to remarket that. And if I'm not able to rent it, then you have to pay me all of it. The minute that somebody moves in, then you're off the hook.
That's right. So,
yeah, that's generally how it works.
What we do have in a contract, though, some contract has this where it will say you can break the lease, but you will have to pay me 2 months.
Yeah, there's worth for it. That can be spelled out. In there.
Yes,
yeah.
In a contract.
And there's things like, you know, like let's say you're renting to someone that's an active military member.
Member of the military.
You can't do anything. Yeah. They just have to bring you the letter that they're getting moved, and that's it.
So they get orders in the middle of December. There's nothing you can do about it. And of course, you know, obviously we support our military folks and whatnot, but. Yeah, it could put you in a bad spot if something like that does happen in the wintertime.
So the only traditional renter I've ever had was military.
Okay.
Oh. So I just knew that they can go whenever they can.
You can just up and go. Be like, I see you, man.
Yep.
They have to.
Okay, this reminds me of something, though. So I have a daughter that just got her permit, her driver's permit.
Yeah.
But I'm terrified of her actually getting behind the wheel of anything that's bigger than a golf cart. So we bought a golf cart for her to basically kind of get some experience in getting behind the wheel of something and driving it, whatever.
Yeah.
So we're out, you know, driving around town the other night in Carter Lake. I live in a small town outside of Omaha and kind of like 5 minutes from downtown Omaha.
Yep.
But we go by one of my rental houses in Carter Lake where I live, and the lawn is like a foot and a half tall, and there's like crap everywhere. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm pissed immediately because my management company never, like, obviously they've been out of there a while.
Yeah.
Right. At least a couple of weeks, if not longer.
With the rain. Yeah.
I'm like, you know, so I call a guy that mows lawns for me and does some work and whatever. And he's like, hey, what do you want me to do with this stuff? Cause there was like a pool in the backyard, like a tire.
The goldfish pool.
No, that's a different one.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a different story, but anyway, so there was all this crap left behind, right? And then so I messaged the management company. I'm like, hey, this house looks like it's abandoned. You guys should have dispatched somebody to mow this. You gotta get your shit together, basically what I was saying.
Yep.
And she's like, I'm so sorry, I'll run over there. They haven't been responding, so we can't, you know, it's not like we can enter or whatever. You can 24-hour notice, you know, blah blah blah. So they went over there and they're like, yeah, and they left some personal stuff. They broke the lease, this and that. And so my message to them was like, look, this is putting me in a bad way. Now we're in the fall in Nebraska when a lot of people are in back to school time. They don't like moving in September, October, whatever. I go, I want you to go after them for everything you can possibly get because I'm going to have to pay somebody now to mow the lawn. I'm going to have to pay them to clean it up. I'm going to have to do landscaping and get rid of all that crap they left behind. And I'm sure it'll be a, you know, not a fun turnover either.
Yeah.
I'll have to repaint and flooring and all that. So I was pissed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, apply all everything you can to their security deposit. And also, if it goes way above that, I want to go after them. And yep. that's your right as yes. as a property owner, if somebody F's up your stuff.
Yep. Funny you say that. I have said the same thing to Austin. Yep.
Well, I see the anger in your face.
Right? Oh, yeah, it makes you mad. You know, man. Like this place is nice. Yeah. Like I put money into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like they had a nice place to live.
Yeah.
I've been responsive on repairs. So I'm just like, whatever. You show me lack of respect, or even, I mean, it's a business deal, right? Yeah. But at the same time, I'm a person. You're
yep.
a person.
Yeah.
Like you disrespected my property. You left a whole bunch of crap behind on purpose. Mm-hmm. You knew what you were leaving me with. So yep. I'm not. It's not like I'm feeling bad about your situation.
Yep.
So, yep. Yeah. Anyway, rant over on that, but
no, that's really good. Yeah, so back to that story. So the lady, she started feeling bad, and she said, "What if I help you find someone?" And I'm like, "How are you gonna do that?"
Yes,
she was like, "Well, I will do the advertisement. I will pay whatever, and then we can get somebody in, so we can leave happy." And I'm like, "Sure." She called me the next day. She said, "Hey, I found a doctor that's moving to Nebraska. They're going to be here doing some medical school, whatever, finishing
their residency.
Yep. And they're going to be working in Nebraska. So they will be building a house. Chances are that they might stay in the house for 2 years." And I'm like, "Yes, please." So background check, everything. I mean, they were clean. And she was super nice that she was able to get me $1,300. She was paying me $1,250, but she was able to up that and get me $1,300. Funny thing is, the doctor's wife is from here. And the wife came to look at the place with her dad. And her dad knew me from Hy-Vee, the grocery store. And we signed the lease. Everything was fine. That was one of the best tenants I ever had.
I was sensing a butt there, but
no. We signed the lease. They stayed there for 2 years. The house was supposed to finish in 2 years, and they have like a little setback. They need two more months to stay. It was great. Money hit my bank account on the first of the month. If something breaks, those guys will call me and say, "Hey, we can get somebody to fix, and we can deduct that from." It was the best outcome ever.
Nice.
So it was great,
man. I tell you what, isn't it funny though, like let's say you only bought one property, right?
Yeah.
And let's say you had the fortune to get a tenant like you're describing right now that yeah. was amazing. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And how smart and lucky that made you feel probably as a landlord.
Man.
And then you take somebody that had maybe a not so lucky situation where the very first tenant they get is yeah. a shitty tenant.
Yeah.
And then they're like,
"I'm done what? With this."
Yeah, yeah, they're yeah. like out. You know yeah. what I mean? Because yeah. it's like, so it's funny how one domino can fall and change all the trajectory in whether or not you continue investing and buying more and like how much you like it.
Yep,
and all that.
Yep. And yep. you know what? When I look back, I sold the house in 2015. And, you know, we want to move into suburbia, big house and all that stuff. That's stupid. Nobody need a big house. I just need a bed and a couch to watch TV. I'm done. But so we sold our house. My wife and I now will look back. If we have kept this house, it will be paid off. Mm-hmm. The value will have doubled, especially with the entry-level homes. It was well-maintained and all that stuff. So the reason why I'm sharing this story, I didn't know what I was doing. That I know there's a lot of people out there that be like, "When can I start?" I have a $5,000 when I started. And I made money when I sold the house. And because I lived there for a certain time before, I think it's 1 or 2 years in Nebraska, I didn't have to pay capital gain. So I made money, but looking back, I should not have sold the house. I should have cash out, refinance, get my money out and keep renting it. I didn't do that. So for those of you that listen to us today and are worried about, "I don't have the money," there's a ways if you want to do it. So I did it.